what would you do if you didn't have to get paid? Like, what would you do to, you know, to just live? You know, you can do this and then do whatever you want to do. You don't have to worry about bills or anything like that. And, you know, owning a business isn't always glamorous, and working for yourself isn't glamorous. So you have to want it that much more. Mm-hmm. So I always say, pick the thing that you love the most, because there's going to be days where it's just going to be like, I love this, but I don't want to do it anymore. But you like still keep going just because you're resilient.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Bauberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome everyone to Rochester Business Connections. I am here with Marie Rochelle. Marie, how are we doing today? What's up?
Hi there. I'm doing great. Thank you. It's my first podcast in a really long time, so excited to be here.
I hope it's going to also be your best podcast in a really long time, or maybe the best podcast ever is a better
way to look at it. We'll see. We will see. Yeah.
And I have lots of questions for you. I know the listeners are going to be intrigued because you are a coach of and for aspiring freelancers, and you're the founder of Convergence Coworking. I am the kind of guy that kind of am a freelancer because I'm a solopreneur, and I know a lot of my listeners are too. So I have a ton of questions, but let's start with the bird's eye view. What exactly do you do for freelancers? I mean, you seem like, looking at your LinkedIn, everything from PR to social media to everything. Do you have a main focus? What are you focused on today?
Yeah, absolutely. So we all have to make money, right? So by day, yeah, I'm a marketer by trade. So PR, marketing, copywriting, all of those things. That's how I serve most of my clients. Coaching for aspiring freelancers actually came about during the pandemic, when my clients that were mostly independent and small business owners, you know, kind of pulled back and were afraid, didn't really know where to go. And I said, okay, well, how else can I utilize my skills to continue working? Because, you know, I didn't want to get a real job. So I was like, okay, maybe I can help others who are either laid off right now, or who just lost their jobs, or who are spending more time at home. And I started this brand, I suppose, of aspiring freelancers. I won most aspiring freelancer at the freelance conference 3 years ago, if wow. you believe it, in Austin, Texas. So that was in 2019.
Oh my gosh.
So having that title was pretty cool. So I said, okay, well, let's just, if I am the most aspiring freelancer of 2019, let's just be the coach for other aspiring freelancers.
Yeah.
There was another category for inspiring, so that's not invalid. So I started doing that, just really wanting to help. So when you ask, like, what's the bird's eye view, what's your, like, my mission, ultimately it's creating community and like connecting others, helping. I've always wanted to do that. So that's where that came from. And also how Convergence Coworking came to light, because it does serve independent small businesses, remote workers, and solopreneurs like yourself. So
talk a little bit about Convergence Coworking. What is a co-working space? What kind of people utilize the space? Where are you located? Because you're down the road from my city, from Rochester, but I have Buffalo listeners, Syracuse listeners, and I'm sure
absolutely
intrigued.
So interestingly enough, I was learning about co-working when I was hosting Freelance Business Week. So still doing that, 3 years running, which is great. We'll be going into our fourth year in 2022. And I was touring co-working spaces as potential hosts for the event, right? So I had this event, didn't really know where to host it. And I said, okay, co-working spaces would be great for this. And Western New York being a little more traditional, we didn't have a ton of spaces like that, but we did have a few. So I did come up to Rochester, which now is Metro Collective. I was visiting Metro Co-work. So now Metro Collective, visiting them. So interestingly enough, like I do come to Rochester when I can. And then really just being inspired by that to create a better conference. And then from that, living in Hamburg, so I live about 20 minutes south of the city, we didn't have a space like that. So there's about a dozen in Western New York. At the time, there were about a handful in and around Buffalo, one in the southern tier in Springville called Unova, which is amazing, but nothing in the middle, right? So there was like the city, the suburbs, and then rural all the way down here, the rural areas, and there was nothing in the middle. Yeah. And I was interviewed for an article, does Hamburg need a co-working space? And, you know, I was like, yes, that'd be great, you know, but only if we did it right, that kind of thing. And I didn't expect to be that person. I was approached and had this opportunity to do it. But I am self-funded. So as we were talking before we started recording, it's a work in progress. We do have our online community open. And then, you know, architectural drawings, planning board, all that fun stuff is currently in the works. But I know exactly what I want to do once everything is approved. So once that's open, I'll definitely have a little get together and you'll have to come down, check it out. And it's on the lake. So it's on Lake Erie, right off Route 5. So you really can't miss it.
I'm excited to keep in touch as this grows. Ultimately, anyone listening should connect with Marie Rochelle as well and keep in touch as this concept grows. I'm pumped. I just realized this, like, in the moment talking to you, and this won't come out for a few weeks. So this will be, has been, so I'll probably give some notes on it when I release this episode, but I'm going to an entrepreneur conference today at Spot Cowork in Rochester. So Spot Cowork's having this entrepreneur conference with, you know, room to pitch, but then a panel and then a keynote speaker and wine and beer and networking. So I'm going to be meeting a lot of entrepreneurs and freelancers. So this is where I can learn a little bit more about what to talk about and learn a little bit about their problems and struggles and maybe have some spicy conversations. So let's get started.
That'll be really fun. Awesome. Yeah, I haven't actually been to Spot, so maybe I'll have to come up there. We have Spot Coffee, a bunch of Spot coffees, but no Spot Co-works.
When I first heard Spot, this was like a year ago, I thought it was Spot Coffee, but no, it's Spot Cowork. I haven't been there yet. It's going to be tremendously fun. And so I just had a conversation a couple episodes ago with Andrew Biernet, and he was in a situation where he left his more, you know, corporate stable role to become an entrepreneur, but he has two kids, he has a family, he has bills. So he made, in his position, the smart move to start building that business on the side and ultimately work at the chamber where he can continue to network as he builds a small business. Mm-hmm. Now, that was his story.
I don't know him, but he's very smart.
Exactly. It's a great podcast episode on basically a lot of just that. Is that a common story? Is it the opposite? I guess the real question here is, can I make a full-time income as a freelancer? Should I expect to make a full-time income as a freelancer? And then maybe let's dissect, like, if it's possible, how do we do it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally possible. It's 100% what you put into it. So whatever you put into it is what you'll get out. But I do know a lot of people who, even pre-pandemic, who would earn full-time income freelancing on the side, like apart from their full-time job. Like they would make more money as a freelancer on the side. And of course, those were different times. Everyone has their struggles. Like freelancing, they are not incorrect when they say it's feast or famine, because that's very much so how it is sometimes. But you can absolutely do it. It's super important to know, you know, what your skills are, who you're serving, and organizing yourself as a true business, which I feel like not everyone does. So because they're either super creative or just very excited or really good at making a craft or, you know, great at speaking, but the back end work is very difficult. And I have a lot of background in business operations. So I think that really helps me to understand how to work mine, but also to help other people just stay organized, as simple as like project management, setting up their LLC. Oh, I'm trying to think what we do. Setting up your LLC, like building your brand, having social media content calendars, setting up your invoicing system, your website, your emails, those kinds of things, because you can always jump in and do something. Like that's the great thing about freelancing and about life, is you can always just do it, but like, do you want to do it right? So that's kind of where I come in, is there's, you know, these people who are fantastic at what they do, whether they're videographers, designers, what have you, they're great, but they're like, I've just been like collecting cash or invoicing via Word document or something. And I'm like, no. I was like, you know, you want to track your income, know how much is coming in, know how much is going out, hit your goals. And then on the flip side, you know, when you do get busy, you don't want to overwork yourself and you want to start, your value, you're like earning your value, and also like just setting boundaries for yourself. Because one thing that I find entrepreneurs have a tough time with, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that we won't stop. But it's like Miley said, you know, can't stop, won't stop. Like we really just will just keep going, work all the time. And that can, you know, that can lead to some unhealthy habits. So yes, it's totally possible. It's highly addictive. So there's like boundaries and accountability and networking and just like partners, like accountability partners that need to, you know, be in place.
I love you say totally possible, highly addicting. That's how I feel.
I mean, I'll sell you on the idea all day long, but like, it's not easy, you know?
No, and I'm the kind of person that works super long hours, and the administrative stuff did come to me later on. I had a client before I had an LLC. I had a client before I knew how to do an invoice. I never signed up with a DocuSign. Yeah. I'm trying to figure this stuff as I go.
And that's
I didn't have QuickBooks. A
lot of people do that. 90% of people do that, and that's totally fine. So you weren't in the wrong whatsoever.
My question there is, do I start with a plan, or do I just get started with something creative? Should I be planning before I start, or should I just Nike just do it and just get started?
Do as I say, not as I do, right? we're excited by, entrepreneurs are excited by figuring things out on the fly, you know, but yes, the more planning you can do, the better it is for your brain. So if at the very least you have a project management software like Asana or Trello or any of those, really Airtable, I use Samepage. Just to organize your thoughts, and you don't need to share this with anyone. It's, you know, if you like to journal, put it in your notebook. That's fine too. I do like having it digitally. So then, excuse me, I can set reminders. Mm-hmm. I can tag other people in if needed. It's true project management, but ultimately it's getting all those ideas and thoughts and tasks of things to do that stress me the heck out of my head and onto a proper board. That's what makes me feel good. So like, I'll do that. I'll see it and I'll say, okay, that's not so bad. You know, or focus on one thing at a time. I don't believe in priorities. I believe in like a priority, like there's one. And ultimately you were mentioning your previous episode. He was a parent. I have two kids too. They're 8 and 4. So ultimately my kids always come first, but as much as I love them, I need to remind myself of that. Because I also believe that, you know, in like filling your own cup. So like filling your own cup so you're the best for who you need to be your best for. So it's a delicate balance, but there's a lot of resources and tools available that help us do those things.
Oh, I always like the fill your cup analogy, because imagine that the cup's half full and then there's two cups next to it. Then you don't have much to share there. But if your cup's overflowing, let it overflow into your family, your community, your friends, whoever you support. Let's overflow our cups. Mm-hmm. And we need to get there. So there's kind of two people that are probably intrigued and listening. There's the current entrepreneur, solopreneur, small business owner, self-starter. Maybe they're a solopreneur. You know, they drive revenue. They're self-starters. And then there might also be people that are kind of just in a 9-to-5 clock in, clock out, but they have a passion and they want to get started. I kind of want to talk to those people as well. Like, let's say I'm thinking to myself, and everybody should think for a moment, what am I good at? What am I passionate about? What can I monetize that's also a ton of fun outside of work? Where should people get started? Like, what's the first step to take this idea that's whirling through people's heads right now? What's the first step to take that idea and make it a reality? Because all this project management software, it's overwhelming, right? Is there a number one first step where I can get quick momentum? Anything come to mind?
So the first thing I'd like to ask when, and this is very elementary, but it works. When I speak for junior achievement, the first thing I ask those classes is, you know, what would you do if you didn't have to get paid? Like, what would you do to, you know, to just live? You know, you can do this and then do whatever you want to do. You don't have to worry about bills or anything like that. And, you know, that's usually the answer of what people who are determined enough to start their own businesses would be willing to like sacrifice lots of different things to start it. Because as we said, you know, owning a business isn't always glamorous and working for yourself isn't glamorous. So you have to want it that much more. Mm-hmm. So I always say, pick the thing that you love the most, because there's going to be days where it's just going to be like, I love this, but I don't want to do it anymore. But you like still keep going just because you're resilient.
Yes.
So that's ultimately where I find there is a fine line with that though, because, and that's why I, you know, not just for myself, but I recommend, you know, people talking to a coach or even a counselor or friends, don't turn something that's truly a hobby into your business, because you're going to hate it. So there is a true fine line of that. And there's a lot more that goes, there's like 17 different layers in that one, but just to keeping that in mind, you know, if you love to cook, you know, you're like, I love cooking, but I don't think I would ever, like, I like to review food and all that other stuff and eat and make dinners. I don't know if I'd ever make that my business, because I don't want to ruin cooking. I don't be like, oh, I have to cook this today. Like, I love writing so much. And some days I'm like, you know, I have to get this writing done, but it comes easier to me. I have a lot of expertise in it. So I very rarely ever have a challenge in that arena. So I'm like, okay, like I just have to write this. Maybe the timing is inconvenient, but the work itself is enjoyable. I just never want to turn something that's truly, truly a hobby, you know, like painting or, you know, cooking, into something that I have to do, because then I just won't like it as much. Writing, I'm like, yeah, give me all the writing. Let me go. So there's a lot of time to be spent in evaluating that. But for those people who are just kind of looking to get started in something, yes, find that thing that you enjoy and just tell your friends and family. You know, if you want to help people with resumes, you know, you want to connect people with jobs, maybe you work in HR full time and you want to maybe see like if you can do it on your own, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in that industry. Start helping with resumes and writing, and maybe do some, you know, career coaching, that kind of thing. Dip your toes in. You can have career coaching calls outside the 9-to-5, because I don't know why I picked this, interestingly enough, because the best people are typically already working 9-to-5 jobs. So you're going to want to get them in their hours. So that really, anyone who's looking for a new place and HR is their place to be, huge market, huge market there. It's very underserved. A lot of the recruiters that are freelance recruiters I know do very, very well. So that's just an example. For those people who are in their business full time, like yourself, can you remind me like what I was telling you? Because I know what I can tell the new people. That's pretty much scripted in my brain. But as far as for you,
well, so for someone like me, so I have shiny object syndrome. My mentor told me that, and I love how you mentioned that. You know, dip your toes in, because I'll dip my toes into a lot of waters. And if I get sick of it quick, or if it takes the life or fun out of it, I'll just go start something else. But that is shiny object syndrome. And then I found something in my marketing, in my podcasting, that is sustainable. But now I'm the middle ground for a lot of people is they're bringing in income, but maybe it's not where they want it to be. And they give away a lot of stuff for free, or they don't know how to value their time, or they don't know how to charge. I know personally, part of my, you know, value statement is I don't charge to open my mouth. But then I sometimes am unsure how many consultation calls do we do? At what point is this a month-to-month client? Mm-hmm. How have you ran into that, where people don't know how to say no, they don't know how to charge or anything like that? And just for anyone who's already figured it out and they're doing it, but then they're hitting this next roadblock, insight for those people as well?
Absolutely. So as you know, it's funny. So as the coach for aspiring freelancers, there's also a coaching module for experienced freelancers, right? So exactly who you're talking about. And I know you said, you know, you more identify as a solopreneur, which is totally valid. So I say it as a generality. I don't mean, you know, to put anyone in a box or anything. Freelancers is the word that I use. It's just taking it to the next level, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, you found your thing. Maybe you have systems, maybe you don't. But that, you know, that's a huge like process for me. Kind of auditing yourself, I think, is the biggest thing, right? So whether you're even doing this on the side, maybe you're doing this on the side, you're doing really well. You're like, you know, I can go full time. Like I can quit my job. You know, I've saved up enough money. Like I can quit my job. Awesome. You always just want to be prepared. And then for those people who are already in it, maybe a year or two, or even 5 years, just evaluating themselves. How is my business doing? What am I earning? You know, just do like that internal audit. Like, how much are you making an hour? How long have you been doing this type of work? Have you served a certain niche, or do you want to serve a certain niche that, like, are you actually serving them or not? Like a brand audit, because, you know, even as when I started as a side hustle, my brand was completely different. It was always the same name, but my logo was different. The way that I approached things was different, you know, and I went from being 20 to being 30 in the time that I've owned my business. So who I was as a person and am as a person completely changed. So my business changed along with that. So I think it's just really important to check yourself. And like you said, having a mentor really, really helps. And I know that it was in one of your questions. I don't want to give you a spoiler or anything, but finding a mentor in a very specific space can be difficult. So I actually don't have a mentor. I feel like my connections and my friends in this space are like all my mentors.
Yes.
Because we learn from each other. So I love that. But
by the way, I love that too. And there's I ask about mentorship all the time. There's never any spoilers. And a lot of people don't have a direct mentor, but they read, they have friends in their space, they listen to podcasts. Yes. Those are mentors. I have
build your own mentor.
Oh my God. I know
that's the thing.
I know things about people that it's ridiculous, but I've listened to their show 50 times. That's a mentor to me. So
yes. No, me too. I think it can be fluid. So I agree with you there. I want to make sure I answer the question.
I took you off track.
Nope, it's okay. I found it. I got it. So it's for the people who like basically have it all together, which if you do, like, we need to talk. But people who have it all together and really want to take it to the next level and have done that audit, and they're like, okay, maybe I'm not earning exactly what I'm worth now. You know, maybe you've been working, I'm going to pick not marketing. Maybe you've been a graphic designer for 5 years now and you were charging $20, $25 an hour. Like, maybe you're worth $55, $75 now. You know, maybe your retainer packages are between $200 and $500. Maybe you should be between like $2,000 and $5,000. Those types of things, evaluating your services and where you're at. I always have my clients write a list of accomplishments and say, like, remember how amazing and awesome you are. Like, we need to see this, because then when you go to change your prices or you go and offer that new like proposal with like in your mind a ridiculous number, say it's like 10 grand or something, and they're like, I've never sent a proposal this large, that you're confident enough to do it, to be like, yeah, I've won this award, I've accomplished this, I've spoken to students, I've volunteered my time with this, I've worked in this industry for 8 years, then you're like, well, yeah, no duh, it's a value prop, right? You're building your own value. And I do have other talks on how to earn your worth and building your own value and like having authority in certain spaces, which really just gives you the confidence to ask for that. Because in sales, and I don't want to go off on a tangent with this, but in sales, it's not so much the number, it's what you're getting for that number. So if you talk about what you have to offer, your experience level in that space, and then you give them that number, they're gonna be like, oh, okay, done. Like, it's easier. It's the build up to the actual, you know, commitment that gets you there, you know? And I think that can be a huge topic, which I know that we kind of wanted to touch on, was that people do this like window shopping and rate shopping and, you know, trying to find the best dollar. And like, yes, you can go on Fiverr and get a freelancer for $5 an hour. You know, I'm Filipino, so I can say this, but like out of the Philippines, you know, like they're very, like you can find someone who's very good for, you know, not a lot of money. And if that's where you're at in your business, I'm not going to be upset by that. But I'm also not going to engage in that behavior as well. So there's like different levels of freelancers, much like there's different levels of businesses. You can buy, and no nicks to any of these companies, because they all have an industry to serve. But like you can go and get a car at, you know, the buy here, play here place, or like you can go to like, I don't know, Maserati or something. And like they, you know, like they bring out, do the whole presentation of the car. Same action. Just depends on like what you're looking for and where you're at. And either of those places are totally fine.
This is so powerful. I mean, you talk about building value, and it's, if the value's there, the price is inconsequential because you're providing so much value experience. I mean, you personally have been doing this over 10 years. You have over 10 years of experience, nose to the grindstone, learning how to do these things. But I still feel like it's like such a huge struggle. So to give you the simplest example ever, and this isn't a small business owner, but he's in HVAC. I was talking to him at a networking event, and everything he was telling me, he is boutique. He is incredible. He's testing the air. He understands air efficiency. He'll put in the unit and set it up where it's going to save you money on energy. But a lot of HVAC contractors, they just do something quick, easy, cheap. Hire someone cheap, don't do as good of a job, but the bottom line is so much lower. Mm-hmm. Have you ran into that with yourself or anyone you work with where they are boutique, they're better, they are more valuable, but people are just looking at the bottom line, and then these freelancers or small business owners are losing out on deals to the people on Fiverr or the HVAC contractor that doesn't do as thorough of a job? Like, what do you do there? Is there an end in sight?
So instead of being negative, I guess, or, you know, kind of like calling people out, like I don't even like saying what I was saying 2 minutes ago. It's just, yeah. I was like, it's not how I want to say it.
Right.
I feel that way because I rather focus on the education of it. It's not like people aren't being arrogant on purpose. You know, we just need to, in this whole type of industry, working with freelancers, that's new, you know, working as independent business owners. And I mean, that part's not new. But what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my gosh, it's totally gone. The environment, I guess. Right, it's just gone. Just the environment and how we work. You know, the new way of work. It's totally new for everyone. And even though it moves so quickly, it's just educating those people to kind of come along with us. For example, the pandemic, right? There was, and especially living in Western New York, not a lot of remote companies. At all, really. You know, you wanted a full-time job, you worked in the office 9 to 5, you went, and that's fine and dandy. But if you were looking at bigger cities, they were like hybrid, you know, remote, flexible, all this stuff. There were a lot of, you know, remote first companies out there, but I would be interested to see the statistics on how many more there are now, especially in Western New York. I would actually be very, very interested in a case study on, you know, how many companies did that, because only in my mind, actually, I worked with a very progressive, accounting firm before I went freelance full time, and they had the remote capability, but they were still in the office. But if someone was sick or you had errands, like you would just take a remote day. That was, and from what I've seen, it was almost unheard of before the pandemic, especially in our area. And now it's the norm, you know. And then of course you've got this whole remote world of hiring opening up, you know, not where it's not just the great resignation, it got incredibly sharky. Like your best employees, you know, you're not just looking at people trying to come and steal them away with money anymore. You're looking at them coming away or stealing them away with like intrinsic value type things, flexible schedules, unlimited PTO, you know, company retreats 4 times a year. Like that, it just got really scary for those companies. And the pandemic, I feel like kind of just like, not just Buffalo, but the whole world. Mm-hmm. Buffalo, Rochester, like Western New York, sorry. That's the Buffalonian in me. Western New York, it like propelled them forward because they didn't have a choice.
Yes.
Which helped us, right? As freelancers, it's like, oh yeah, we've been working from home forever. So you have, you know, issues with how to separate your work and your home life. You have, you know, priority issues, like it's mental health issues. Like it was all kind of happening for these people for the first time. And the very small freelance community that we have here, which, you know, it's not very small, but it's very small compared to the size of our city. Mm-hmm. Was like, well, this is what we've been doing forever. So welcome to the party, you know? But back to your initial question, is just education and helping people understand like how they can do those things better. You know, going fully remote, we know how to do that. Something that I've been really passionate about is helping companies and startups. So with Convergence, I have specifically a program called Freelancers Serving Startups. Mm-hmm. And it's a panel of freelancers there to discuss like our area of expertise with these startups who may have questions, because people don't there's like a gap between like having this mindset of like, oh, employee, contractor, freelancer, like there's all these preconceived notions of different roles. But sometimes depending on your model of business, those roles can be more beneficial to you. So I actually wrote an article for Step Out Buffalo called How to Work With, or Working with Freelancers 101. It's very, very good.
Yes.
not very good is the fact, like, I wrote it, it's very good, but it's very informative to how you can work with them.
It's incredible because you wrote it. Let's be
honest. It's a great article just because I feel like it's something that I'd want to share. And for example, it's got, you know, have clear expectations. Mm. You know, if you want to do a sample, we mentioned this earlier, but like doing free work, if you want an example of work, take a look at their portfolio, see what they've done and how it relates to the work you're looking to ask them to do. If you want them to do an exercise, it would be really awesome if you paid them for it, especially if it's going to take 2 to 4 hours. You know, free work, which I know we were going to veer into that eventually. Free work is a part of that Fiverr arena, I think. It's where it devalues the work that we do. And I understand, you know, when you're looking to get a new job, whether you're looking for a 9-to-5 or not, that there's some time to be put into it, and that's great. But as a freelancer specifically, our time is our money, and we most likely have, if we're trying to work with a new client, we most likely have samples that are very, very close to like what we're looking to do. So if you're asking them to go above and beyond and do something and spend their time that they could be using to earn money, to, you know, compensate them for that. It doesn't have to be crazy. It doesn't even have to, you know, it could be the market rate, it could be below market rate, but just something, because again, with what we learned in the pandemic is that we're all just humans and we have that psyche too of an actual exchange. So there's just more respect and it's more of like a partnership rather than like, oh, I'm your boss and you work for me. Yes. Kind of thing. So I feel like that was a pretty decent segue into that. But just about education, making sure that people kind of reach out. If you are a startup and you want to work with freelancers, read that article, call us and mm-hmm. just ask, hey, you know, for example, the town of Hamburg, they were actually looking to put out an RFP to work with a marketing contractor. Interestingly enough, I serve on that board, so like I couldn't go for it. And I said, I would love to help you create an RFP that's appealing, you know, so not just the agencies in the area, which agencies are great, but not just those agencies, just so the RFP itself is inclusive to the type of workers that are out there.
What's an RFP?
Request for a proposal.
Got it. Got it.
You got it. Yeah.
I love, we are just human, see it as a partnership. Wow. And everyone loves a story. I want to hear a little bit more about you because you've been doing this over 10 years and you started so young. And whether it's free work or you and I were talking about red flags when we first met, tell us like your a 10-year journey. And maybe give us some examples of times where you've done free work or you've ran into any of these red flags. Just incorporate, you know, how did it come up for you? Let's start with a couple red flags. And then I want to hear exactly how you discovered that these were red flags and what we should do about them.
Yeah. So I want to preface with the fact that free work isn't always bad. You know, yes. Internships are fine. You know, if you're just starting out, like, yes, help a couple of your friends and families with their new business. You know, trade is a beautiful thing. You know, we used to live on that back in the day. So I do have, you know, empathy and compassion for that type of that area of business. But once you, you know, build that reputation, you don't need to do that forever. Just an FYI, you know. So red flags. I know I mentioned kind of like window shoppers earlier. And there, those are the people who will say, okay, great. You know, you're a copywriter. What's your hourly rate? A really good freelancer or a freelancer that you probably want to work with will say, well, it depends on the project. And I know we all heavily dislike the, oh, it depends answer, yes. But that's the answer you want because they're not just cookie cutter. They're not going to give you a cookie cutter product or service for a cookie cutter price. They're going to look at your project, look at your industry and say, hey, I'm either a really good fit for this, and this is the, you know, this is the amount that you, you know, you're going to be charged based on the project, based on my area of expertise, research involved, et cetera. Or, you know, I'm really not a really great fit for this, but guess what? I know someone who is, and they can give you that person. Yes, it's always great to have hourly rates and packages set up for clients, you know, mm-hmm. so they have something to evaluate from. But over time, I think we've all learned that, and you're in marketing as well, like it's better just to learn your client, learn where they're coming from, because I don't know. I mean, we're all in this in business to make money, but for me, it's really more important about who I'm working with than like the dollar. I'd rather grow with yes. someone and ramp up. And that's the glory of being a freelancer is I get to choose that. Because again, you know, like I've got two kids, I've got bills that I want to pay too, but I 100% have and will continue to say no to projects that like aren't a personally like a good fit for me. You know, I could go and make a lot of money in certain industries, but like my heart's not in it. So I'm like, isn't that like a job? That feels like a job. Mm-hmm. You know, go do something that you really don't love, but like you make a lot of money and you just kind of suck it up. Like that's a job. I work for myself. I want to do something I really enjoy. And again, I, you know, saying, you know, we're resilient is that sometimes we have to say no to the things that we're just like, why are we saying no to this? Like, what was wrong with me? But that's, you know, that's an experienced freelancer will tell you that you get really good at saying no to like hard things. Like you get really good at saying no. Like that's something to practice. You know, it took me almost, I think, honestly, it was about 6 years in. It took me 6 years in to start saying no. So I've been saying no for 4 years and it's great.
Yes.
So as far as red flags, people who window shop, what are your hourly rates? You know, fine, I'll give you a ballpark. You know, I can, if you really need it, you know, and you're just like, can I afford you kind of thing? Or, oh, Marie, I'm looking just to sit with you for a couple hours and pick your brain. Oh, we can segue right into that one.
I just don't, so like, I don't even like the sound of that term. Like my brain doesn't want to be picked.
Right,
my brain is fragile. Don't pick it.
Like that's what COVID tests are for. but yeah, so pick your brain, you know, what your hourly rates, like, I guess I can partially respect the asking of rates so they understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. The picking your brain part really gets me every time. If it's someone I have a relationship with and like, they're going to buy me lunch. Okay, sure. You can talk to me about your business over lunch. That's fine. Again, a lot of personal choices. But someone you don't know from Adam calling you and saying, hey, like, can I get on your calendar? Just pick your brain. You know, someone from school you haven't talked to in a decade that sees, you know, what you're working on and wants to talk to you. Yes, of course you want to be polite because you never know who you're going to meet and how that's going to work out. Like I always say, you know, always be nice because you never know. Mm-hmm. But there's still levels, boundaries, I think are super important. What other ones are really good? Red flags, red flags. I'm thinking about when people are trying to work with you, but also when you've already engaged with a client, like what are some red flags? I always recommend like setting up agreements and those kinds of things. But if you ever get, you know, as a solopreneur, as a freelancer, if you ever get that feeling that your client is starting to act like an employer, those are all like huge red flags, you know, like we expect you to be available during this time and this time, like, unless it's in your contract, you still work for yourself and your responsibility is your scope of work. So I always heavily, heavily stand by, you know, your agreement, you know, it's like, these are the things you're agreeing to do. If you do agree to be available, you know, daytime hours, you know, East or like West Coast time, then like, yeah, be available those hours, but also set a precedent for yourself and say, okay, my response time is, you know, what, like 2 to 12 hours, depending. Or, you know, you let them know if you're going out of town. All those things need to be in your agreement, whether it be on the client side or the contractor side, because you just want to protect yourself and you're not being rude. It's just like, hey, you know, we're going to be doing this, you know, on a different level and we are partners. So at any time they don't feel, you know, either side, does it make you feel like you're, you know, a partner? I would definitely say that's a red flag. And freelancers do that too. Freelancers 100% do it too. We're not, you know, perfect over here. Freelancers and the companies are over there that are the worst, you know, freelancers. I've seen some bad freelancers. It happens. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, you know, maybe a job is a better fit for you.
Yes.
You know,
I love,
I'm trying to think of more red flags. Sorry. I couldn't find my list. I know we had a whole hour conversation in one of my group coaching calls on this. So they're going to call me out on this and be like, Marie, you have like 20 more of these. Like, yeah, no.
Overall, I like that you're exposing the red flags. And a lot of what I'm hearing from you is it's empowerment for freelancers, where a lot of people teach how to get leads or how to close a sale or how to market and do a pay-per-click campaign. And you end up with a whole team of clients that treat you poorly or aren't a good fit for you. And the willingness to say no to clients, the willingness to value your time. I was asked on a podcast the other day, well, what is your niche? And I'm like, my niche is not shitty people. Like, I only work with people that I want to work with. And when I go into a lot of these conversations, I kind of want them to sell themselves to me. Like, I want to make sure that I'm going to be able to put in 120% for them. And if not, I know it's not going to be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And I don't quite even understand why. So knowing some of these red flags is beneficial to look for these kind of things. Give us one example in all your years of a time where you just didn't know to look for these red flags. Something terrible was right in front of you. You can throw them under the bus if you want to, or you can be general. But has there ever been a time where you're just like, oh my gosh, this was a poor decision. This wasn't a good client for me. And I'm empowered not to work with this kind of client ever again.
Oftentimes you really don't know until it happens, right? Yes. So, you know, like with any service, unless you get a referral, or even if you know them, like they can be your friends and family, they can be your inner network. And you work with them and you don't realize, you know, until certain things happen that those things come to light. I have a lot of fun stories. There was a client that I had that was wonderful, like absolutely wonderful. I did so much work with them and they loved me. Something happened. And what it boiled down to is that like someone on the leadership team was like, called me in the middle of the night. Like I actually like put my kids to sleep. They called me and were like yelling at me about some, like a post or something. And I said, okay, I was actually asked to post something directly from someone else on the leadership team. Hey, can you post this? This is the picture. This is the content. I'm like, okay, great. Like, yeah, I'll share this with you. Did it. Someone else on that team did not like that. I heard all about it. And I was very calm. I actually wasn't like mad. I was just like, in my head, I'm a super empathetic person. I'm like, I know something else is like going on. Like, why you're so upset at this?
Yes.
But that was, I mean, obviously someone yells at you, huge red flag. They, you know, they think you're there, you know, whoever, like no, employees shouldn't be treated that way. No human beings should be treated that way. So just in general in life, the yelling, probably not a great sign. So, you know, the next day before, you know, they could be like, oh, well, we didn't like that. Like we're not gonna be able to work together anymore. I crafted an email first thing in the morning and I said, unfortunately, like this isn't, you know, working out as far as, you know, communication. I went the communication route. I went, you know, the level of respect. Like I really enjoyed working with them. You know, I love their product service. Like I love everything about it. Just unfortunately with that experience, like I'm no longer able to continue working with you. So similarly to what you were saying, you know, we get to interview our clients as much as they interview us to like work with us. And again, it doesn't matter how well you know each other. It really doesn't. And sometimes the closest relationships to you are the ones you need, like the fine printed agreements, because there's just a lot of gray area. And I don't, interestingly enough, I didn't set out on this conversation to deter people from freelancing. Like I want to build and empower that community, but to know that again, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like it's very difficult and you have to love it. Like you were saying, you know, you're very good at what you do. You want to do that best work for your clients. You're not going to want to do that. Like if you don't enjoy your clients, you have to enjoy them as human beings. And there's got to be a synergy and, you know, we all have different personalities. So that has to work. It has to work. It's a lot like a relationship. It's a lot like a business marriage. And, you know, sometimes you got to do some breaking up and it's hard. Anytime I've let a client go, I've sulked for like weeks because I've always liked them as people and, or I had empathy for wherever they were that had them act a certain way. Or even me, if I ever acted a certain way and was like, well, yeah, I kind of screwed that up. Like that happens. And just kind of moving on professionally, because again, it's a very delicate balance between, you know, you are your business. So it's not all business and it's not strictly professional. Like if you're your business, it's intertwined, which can make it a little more tricky.
Yeah. You're your business. There has to be that synergy. This has all been super valuable. I wish we hadn't ran out of time here. What we're going to do is go super rapid fire, either or, fill in the blank questions.
I kind of saw these, so I'm excited. Let's do it.
Points don't matter. Answers don't matter. It's just to get to know Marie Rochelle a little bit better. And we will start with coffee versus tea.
Tea.
Beer, wine, or fill in the blank.
Wine.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Favorite season in Western New York?
Fall.
Fall. give us like a dessert, like a guilty pleasure, ice cream, cake, pies, any favorite guilty pleasure for the end of the day?
Ice cream. Chocolate ice cream. Yeah, but the So Delicious is, dairy is not my friend.
Give us just a book, a podcast, a mentor, someone. I've got my pen out. Everyone, I'm going to ask another question where we're going to have to take notes. Give us a book, a podcast, a mentor, a YouTube person, someone that I should learn from about this kind of stuff. If I want to ultimately, at the end of the day, someone should just call you if they're serious. But if I'm just getting my feet wet, where did you learn some of this stuff?
As far as the money conversations go, You're a Badass at Making Money by Jen Sincero changed my life. She did. And I read that book years ago, so I'd be interested to reread it. And I know it's written by a woman, kind of more for women, but I don't think it matters. I think everyone should give it a go. And her books are great, but that was my favorite one. It changed my outlook on money. And there's a lot of other good books out there. I know we have like 30 seconds. Let's see. Let me go through. I'm just going to pull up my Audible really, really quick.
And for the listeners, we had a certain amount of time, but Marie Rochelle is so awesome that we ended up talking way too much in the front, and then
we had to squeeze
it all in. But it's on both. I do this.
There's a good book called The Buddha and the Badass. I loved that. The Buddha and the Badass. I'll send you a screenshot of all my stuff. And then The Execution Factor. That book was also life changing as far as just like picking what you want to do and doing it. That was really, really good. And then there's a couple like self-help books mixed in there, but they can reach out to me if they want the full list.
So assuming our pen and paper is already out, and we can also go to the show notes for this, how do I connect with you? Should I go to the website, a social media platform, email, phone call? Where are you most comfortable with listeners reaching out and saying hello?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Instagram would be great. So my business handle is Biz Be Active. So B-I-Z. B-E-A-C-T-I-V-E. So just Biz Be Active on pretty much every platform. And then if you look for Marie Rochelle in Buffalo, New York, you should be able to find me. But yeah, and we'll put all my contact information in the show notes. That's fine. I love when people reach out. You know, I get the most random reach outs. Hey, I'm looking to open a co-working space, like not anywhere near you, but I read your article. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, talk to me. I had a couple people from the Step Out Buffalo article on co-working spaces. Say, hey, like you haven't been to our space yet. Like come see us. I'm like, yes, please. Like, and I put my cell phone number in that article and they texted me. I love that. So that's a Buffalo. That's a Western New York thing. I know I keep saying Buffalo, but
You're Buffalo. I'm Rochester. We're teammates. Western New York's awesome.
Definitely are.
And our pen and papers are out. Give us one more task. Give us homework. Something, if I were to journal something down from everything we've talked about today, just a big takeaway or an exercise, something that I should get started with right now, what would that be?
My list of accomplishments that I was talking about earlier, write down a list of accomplishments. Go back as far as college. And interestingly enough, my good friend recommended that to me. So I can't take full credit because he told me that I needed to be more confident. And that was 3 years ago. Mm. And I needed to write a list of accomplishments. And now I have a running tab of them. So no matter where you're at in your journey, whether you're working or not working or side hustle, full-time freelance, what have you, write that list of accomplishments. You're going to feel so awesome when you're done. And if you feel like you don't have anything, it's not true. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be big. It could be anything. It could be that you did a mural, you know, in high school or something. It could be anything. But I want you to write that list because you'll look at it and go, wow, that person's really awesome. And you'll be like, oh yeah, that's me.
That's me. It's not true. We all have accomplishments no matter what you think. Wow, Marie Rochelle, thank you for coming on the show. We'll have to do it again. I really appreciate your time. I think it's been a lot of fun.
This is really fun. I'm a little rusty, so thank you for having me. This is great.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.